Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miroboard. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miroboard?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Hey, yo, welcome into CHGO White Sox postgame show, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the app today and use promo code CHGO when you sign up. Welcome into Studio B of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I feel like I did that wrong. I'm Sean Anderson. You can find me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. Alongside me is the full CHGO White Sox crew. That's Vinny Duber in the yellow shirt. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can read his latest piece about what to do about this roster once Aloy Jimenez finishes his rehab start down in Birmingham. So go check that out at allchgo.com. Man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
What? That was really quick.
Yeah.
Succinct. You can follow him on Twitter at HectorWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader, and we are being produced today by Stephen Nicholas, who is Greeker than Giannis Antetokounmpo, and was teaching us.
Stop. Greeker? Stop. Was that's just us wrong.
That is true.
No, yeah. He's not. You well, never lived in Greece.
That's or not a word.
Citizen of Greeker.
These are not words, guys.
He taught us. He taught us Greek earlier today. Didn't you learn anything?
No, because I think he was wrong.
No, I was right. If anything, you learned a swear word, so you're welcome.
You have the ability to go on to the certain Greek translation sites on this computer and show all the folks all the swear words you know in Greek. So if you want to share with the audience, feel free, okay?
I think
heads
I'd rather
up. Show and tell.
Heads up White to Sox the audience. Podcast instead.
Heads up to the audience. You won't be able to read it because it's in a completely different alphabet.
Yeah, there's a... And there's also like 24 letters instead of 26.
As one might say, so it's all Greek to me.
Right. Yeah. I see what you did there. Mm. Yeah. No kids yet. Still dad jokes.
I mean, it's just a Shakespeare reference.
It is.
The original pop culture.
The original comedy.
From the 15th century. My favorite.
Oh, man. All right. We are coming to you live after a White Sox. That's way more important than all the other stuff we're talking about. White Sox win. White Sox win 6-0. They shout out the Guardians, and they have won 5 of their 7 series in the month of May. So make sure you're hitting that like button. And real quick, before we get into Schwo Super Chat, what do we make of another series win here in the month of May? Herb, we'll start with you.
I mean, specifically against that team, the Guardians, I think it's just getting over the bugaboo of last year. You saw what the Guardians did to the White Sox, specifically in the games that they played, and then when they won the championship of the AL Central, cheering and saying, fuck the White Sox. And I don't know if the White Sox took it personally, but they have made it their duty to beat the Cleveland Guardians in 2 straight series now, the first 2 times that they saw them. It's good to see that they have, you know, got over that hump, and I hope they continue doing that versus this AL Central team. So it's awesome that they're winning series overall, but specifically against these Guardians.
Man, Michael Kopech. I know we're going to talk about him, but he's the screaming headline from this week in Cleveland because he did it again. Obviously, he wasn't quite as close to perfect as he was the first time out, but basically a replica of what he was able to do last weekend against the Royals. Today, 7 shutout innings, 9 strikeouts, 2 hits, 1 walk, no runs. You throw it together with what he did in his last start. You're talking about 15 innings with no runs given up, with only 1 walk allowed, with only 3 hits on the board. And how about 19 strikeouts over his last 2 starts? this is a guy who's looking like a totally different pitcher in a good way. A guy who, if he can do, not again, like I said yesterday, not this, but something closer to this than what he was doing earlier in the season with some consistency, look out, because the White Sox rotation looks all the better. And it's been very, very good of late. I think something like a sub-3 ERA in May or something like that. I mean, it's been fantastic.
Well, the big storyline coming out of the last series was 6 straight quality starts. The White Sox haven't gotten 9 straight quality starts, but if you take Jesse Schulten's and Jimmy Lambert's contribution in that game, that's 6 innings of quality work right there. So basically 9 straight quality starts for the White Sox. So we got some stats to show the growth. I was just about to make a Clint Frazier joke. We're at 15 likes. And we have all this,
you know, Gucci,
Gordon Beckham, Tanahito, Connor Gillespie.
No, he was 12.
Oh, he's 12.
Yeah.
And we just went through all the 15s recently. Well, who am I thinking?
I tweeted them all out. Frank Thomas started by wearing 15. Yes, did you know that?
90. That's fun fact. Yeah. You can see him running around in Milwaukee County Stadium.
Josh Paul wore number 15.
Josh Fields did?
Josh Paul, the catcher.
No, I just didn't know if he also did. All right. Anyways.
Dick Allen.
I mean, the
should it be a Hall of Famer.
Sick ass photo. But
anyway. 5, Clark. 5 in a row. So I got 3 more to go.
What's Herbtopus?
The Soxtopus. Herb's Soxtopus. He's calling it my Soxtopus. It's Sean Soxtopus. Oh, there, I see Herbtopus.
Well, what is this?
No, remember when you're talking about Soxtopus?
That's home runs. That was a home run celebration. No, you don't want to do it.
But then, like, Clark asked, how many wins in a row do we have to get for Herb to participate in the Soxtopus? Because remember, you were doing it, and I was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
And I said 5. Yes, I said 5.
5 in a row?
5 in a row.
Why wouldn't you make it 8?
No, just 5. Because they barely have got, they've only got 3 in a row as their highest.
I'll take it, but I mean, Octo.
Adam Engel, Brett Laurie, Gordon Beckham, Wilson Bedemit, Tadahito Iguchi, Sandy Alomar Jr., Josh Paul, Frank Thomas. Those are the 15s in my lifetime.
Love that. You said Adam Engel got DFA'd.
He did.
From the pods?
From the Padres.
Here we go, baby. Let's go.
No longer a father, Adam Engel. I mean, he's a father, but lowercase f father, but no longer a capital F.
He still
have
the
father.
Red glove?
Probably. I didn't see a lot of games.
Watch some Padres games.
He was mostly in the AAA during his Padres time, came up a couple times, and then had to get DFA'd. The
Chihuahuas have red. So, I mean, he'd fit in with Joe Kelly. Oscar Colas, I think, had a red glove. Aloy also, I think, has a little bit of red in it. Kopech today had some red in his glove.
I mean, going to that team, it doesn't matter, too, because everybody has different colors also. So Manny has a different color, so does Tatis and et cetera.
All right, so Herb has a bet for 5 wins in a row, he'll do the Soxtopus, so Sox need 3 more. We got to go to the Super Chat from Schwo, too, and then we'll get into Michael Kopech and the fantastic starting pitching that the White Sox have been getting and just pitching in general. But Schwo with the $2 Super Chat, thank you very much. Sean is one step closer to getting that pet pig. I remember the deadline date was July 4th, and I remember saying that this wasn't going to happen and that if anything, we were going to put it in the center conference room here, a pet pig.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I think you were gone that day.
Were you here?
Yeah.
I might have. Was I at the ballpark?
I think it was a Sunday show. I think it was Sunday show. Yeah, Vinny
we
had
home? Been,
Vinny was doing the show from Guaranteed Rate.
I could have sworn we were in the studio.
Yeah, we were.
I feel like it was like 3. Well, then if it wasn't a Sunday show, I think it was like 3. If the Sox are 3.5 games back, or 3.5 games under 500 by July 4th, I get a pet pig.
Mm-hmm.
Are you allowed to have a pet pig?
No, I said no to it.
No, I mean, in Chicago, are you allowed to have a pet pig so. By law?
You can have you can have chickens, so why not pigs?
You got to get a permit for that, though, don't you?
I think so. There's people right by my house that have pet chickens.
Some urban chickens?
According to Chicago Tribune, and this is on the petzealot.com, so trust it if you want.
My favorite website.
That people can legally own pet pigs in the city of Chicago. Yeah. I went to prom.
With a pig?
Not prom.
I
went to
Jesus
home,
Christ.
I went to homecoming with a pig. With a lady who owned a
oh, I'm about to say, goddamn, you calling that lady? You're talking reckless over there.
No, I didn't even think he was
watching.
I didn't even think he was being insulting. I just thought maybe he went with a literal pig. Like maybe he lived out in you know.
Her last name was Piggy. Her first name was Miss. I'm sorry. I don't know. Where do you take
it went from a funny joke where Sean went to prom with an animal to a weird joke where Sean went to prom with a puppet that he had on his hand.
Yeah,
would you put it past me?
Oh, no. Boy.
All right.
Well, you guys, two different White Sox. That's
disappointing. That, like,
you get you guys bestiality would... talk from Sean.
Wow.
Whoever said, whoa,
you're allowed
whoa,
to dance
whoa.
With animals? What Come on now.
Are you?
Are you?
I've been wasting 44 years of my life. Mercy.
All right, let's go on to Michael Kopech's start. Wow. Steven, do you have the starting pitching graphic? I know we made, have you made a
not even 10 minutes graphic. Into this show.
Good. Seven innings pitch. We have to do two of these today. This is the second one's going to be all wacky. A little behind, pull the curtains behind you. We'll pre-record something for Monday, and oh boy, we'll see how fun that one is. But seven innings pitched, no earned runs, two hits, nine Ks, one walk for Michael Kopech. Cal Quantrill, his dad was named Paul, right?
Yes.
Josh Paul, Cal Quantrill. That doesn't work.
No.
What?
No. Josh Paul Quantrill. Trying yeah, to.
There it is. Putting together.
Four innings pitched.
Four and after.
It's a callback.
You're a big time Wheel of Fortune guy.
Chain Reaction. You ever see that one on GSN?
I have.
Yeah. Four innings pitched for Cal Quantrill, six earned runs, four hits, two Ks, and three walks. The Sox opened it up in the fourth inning. Bases loaded, and they were actually able to cash in. Thanks to Cal Quantrill, who had a wild pitch in there as well. But good stuff from the White Sox offensively. But the main story is Michael Kopech. Like Vinny mentioned, right when we talked about the win, instant reaction, he was able to do it again. Like, that's the big thing. We saw eight innings against the Kansas City Royals where, nearly perfect. And, we saw 60% fastballs or 60 out of his 98 pitches were fastballs. And it's like, it is the Royals. We'll see if you can duplicate this against a different team and maybe a team with better hitters. I thought Jose Ramirez would have a nice day against him and his fastballs. Maybe Stephen Kwan. He just was absolutely dominant, absolutely electric. Had five Ks after the first two innings. Just really seems confident. I don't know if there was a switch. I don't know if there was a certain moment, but it does seem whatever he took into the Royals game, he was able to take into the Guardians game, and he really does seem truly confident in everything that he has, mainly his fastball, but we'll get into that after. But, I mean, I don't know if you noticed anything post his Royals start where, he talked about that confidence.
I mean, listen, like we've been talking about, it's seeing it happen. It's seeing those results. It's getting the results that you want after the work that you put in. Sometimes, a lot of the time, the vast majority of the time, you have to settle for, okay, there were some victories, some things that didn't go my way, but hey, at the end of the day, it's a win, fine. Michael Kopech has now seen twice in a row everything he worked on works perfectly when he gets to the game and gets the perfect result that he wants. This is what you dream of probably when you're a pitching coach, doing that work between outings, doing that work with your guys where it's like, all right, let's tweak this a little bit. Let's focus on this. I mean, remember, we were talking after the first outing that Michael Kopech had this season that he was tipping pitches against the Giants, giving up all those home runs. I'm not saying that that carried through. It seemed like they fixed that after that one go, but he was still having problems where it wasn't doing exactly what he wanted to do. He was giving up homers. He was walking guys. The last two outings, zip, nothing. And it's just, you're seeing the fastball velocity get up to where he wants it to be. You're seeing basically a game plan being executed to perfection. We always talk about when it comes to Pedro Grifol using the bullpen, right, that his plans hinge on it going right. His plans hinge on it going well. I'm going to use this guy for these three batters, then we're going to use this guy for the next three batters. But it all has to work in order for the plan to play out the correct way. It's the same thing with Kopech, and it's working. It's not like there's these moments that he has to, okay, I got to go back to the drawing board because I got to figure out what I'm going to do now that this didn't go the right way. The last two times out, he has done absolutely perfectly. He even had a bug fly in his eye or something like that today, and it didn't faze him too much. So, good for Michael Kopech, great for the White Sox that they're getting this right now, and to be able to see two in a row of this gives them confidence that this can become a consistent thing.
Herb was real nervous when he saw that bug going into his eye.
It's the White Sox, so I had
to be. He saw the White Sox season crumbling.
I mean, we looked at the month of May. His first start, May 2nd, versus the Minnesota Twins, gave up one hit. May 7th, that was the outlier. Six innings, gave up eight hits, four earned runs. But other than that, 4 2/3 versus the Astros, one hit. The 19th versus the Royals, one hit. Today versus the Cleveland Guardians, two hits. And as other Sean says, strikeouts are great. 19 in his last two, but one walk, and that was in his last inning of work in this game. So I don't know if I saw anything, and I was, you know, attributing all of it, most of it, to the extra day of rest. No extra day of rest here, and he just went out and just dominated that Cleveland Guardians lineup. And it's not that Cleveland Guardians lineup that showed up at guaranteed rate without Ramirez and our guy Josh Naylor. They had both those guys, had the full lineup out there, and he's like, I don't give a damn. Stephen Kwan struck out him twice in the first two at-bats swinging. That is a hard thing to do. We know how pesky Stephen Kwan is. And he's like, cool, enjoy yourself on that bench because I got my stuff. And I think Michael Kopech has that problem that Dylan Cease used to have where he would just run into a bad inning and never get over it or not have the confidence to throw the ball where he needs to. Early in the year, we saw him get hit hard by San Francisco, and so that has to do something to your psyche. It's like, oh, my God, I threw the ball down the pipe. People crushed it. And so it took him a little while to actually feel confident that, hey, I got premium stuff. I'm a good pitcher. And he did that today. He pitched along with the high-velocity fastball, the slider, the curveball, changeup. All the things are working for him. This is the seldom times where you have the premium stuff along with the control and command. So Michael Kopech, if he continues doing this, like as Vinny says, he's not going to be this for the year, but he can be in this neighborhood all the time. And well, finally, he's giving you length, 8 innings that time, 7 innings this time. That is the Michael Kopech that I'm talking about.
He can be. Why are we putting a limit on what
he could be? Because these are shutouts.
Yeah, but I mean,
he can't be a shutout pitcher every time.
Every time, yeah. He's setting records, but I mean, he has been a top prospect before. Like, his ceiling was top of the rotation ace. He flashed an incredible, you know, fastball all throughout his minor league climb. And we saw that even in 2018 when he debuted. He hasn't, you know, he's lost a little bit of velocity, but it's still effective. And what we saw last year, I think he was top 8 in stuff for just strictly four-seam fastball, and that's continued. Lance Brozdowski, who works for Marquee, puts together pitching recaps after every single game day, and he's been writing about Kopech recently. And last start, he was up to 130 stuff plus on his fastball, which you know he would be top of the leaderboards for a starting pitcher. And Kopech is a guy that just has been leaning on this fastball to, you know, really unusual levels. Steven, you could flash the typical stat. This is the stuff graphic that we have. But Kopech, this is out of starting pitchers throwing four-seam fastballs out of 2022 and 2023. Kopech is, you know, really in his own league when it comes to using his fastball. He's top 4 and 5 in fastball usage in 2022 and 2023 for starting pitchers. Carlos Rodon is 6th, just for reference, in 2022, because he's obviously hasn't pitched in 2023. But last year, Rodon threw 61.2% fastballs out of his pitches. Kopech this year, and it's going to go up after today, 63.3% of his pitches are forcing fastballs. Last year was 61.6%. So he really relies on it uniquely. But Kopech today continued to rely on it. We saw 60-plus fastballs against the Royals, and today we saw that continue. 62 fastballs for Kopech, 67% of his pitches were four-seam fastballs. He threw his slider 15 times, and he threw his changeup 14 times. The four-seam fastball velocity is up 0.8 miles per hour, and his slider is up 1.6 miles per hour. That is huge. Usually I don't include the vertical and horizontal break, but I do think it's very great to see. The vertical break is still elite. It's averaging 12 inches for vertical rise. Break for rise. That's above major league average. And horizontal break, that's ride. He's seeing 3 more inches. Yearly average has been 10 inches. Now it's 13. So we see Stephen Kwan, his first strikeout, that 3-2 fastball, it looks like it's a strike and it just tails out. And then Josh Bell to end the second inning, or I think it was to end the second inning, or maybe it was the second out of the second inning. But he gets Bell into a 3-2 count after throwing the changeup bottom of the zone, and then gets him on a fastball that, again, tails to away from a left-hander, and he was just dominating those left-handed bats today.
And I guarantee the Cleveland Guardian fans are like, why was you know, I think it was Rosario swinging at the ball that's about to hit him. That was what it was. It was the ride, I mean, the ride that was going into him, because it looks like a strike and the ball is about to hit him and he just fouled the ball off. So I'm sure the whatever the Cleveland equivalent of this is like, well, you're just swinging at everything. It's like, no, Michael Kopech was premium today. There was hardly anything that could be done. I mean, Michelle Kwan's better than most people, so that's not fair to Stephen Kwan, Swo.
I mean, she's an Olympian, right?
I mean, I think she won the gold medal.
I mean, that's pretty good, pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people. Do you have a gold medal?
Yeah, at Wana Olympics. You remember Wana? It's like a Christian thing. Mm. Okay. Somebody here probably remembers Awana.
Do you have a gold medal?
No. I've seen Moana. Is that what we're talking
about?
No,
not the movie. Okay. Right. Awana. It's like a...
That's Disney. This is Christian.
Gotcha.
A faux, you know, Native American thing, but it was Christian. It was weird.
No gold medals.
But Kopech, going back to what he did today, you know, not a lot of swings and misses for Cleveland. We talked yesterday about they do swing out of the zone a decent amount, and that kept up today. Kopech was able to get them to swing out of the zone 38% of the time. That's above their season average. So he was able to get them to swing and miss out of the zone. But 12 whiffs on 34 swings on his four-seam fastball, 10 called strikes on his four-seam fastball. Again, bringing up those walks, only one walk today. He was able to throw strikes today, 35% called strike whiff percentage on his four-seam fastball. On the day, 33% called strike whiff percentage, major league average around 28-29%. But yeah, it's really the fastball that's the key. And if you have a team that's going to be able to key in and crush his fastball, then, you know, it might be a rough day for Michael Kopech, just because you throw hard, you're going to get hit hard. But he did a great job where, you know, today Cleveland, who doesn't have a ton of power, average exit velocity of 88.1 miles per hour on his four-seam fastball. So, you know, maybe if this is the Yankees, even though he did great against the Yankees last year, maybe he has a little bit more trouble. But, again, it's that elite movement on, you know, his vertical and horizontal ride and rise that really, you know, sets him apart.
I'll shout out in the comments other Sean, too, because he brought up Sebi Zavala, and I think Sebi Zavala needs to get some credit for what many of the guys on this pitching staff have been able to do of late. He's a guy that gets rave reviews from his ability to work with these guys. Now he has caught all four of Michael Kopech's last four starts, which are two good ones. The short one that was under five or fewer than five innings against the Astros, and then the one in Cincinnati where he gave up the four home runs. So it's not like it's been all smooth sailing with Sebi behind the plate in terms of results, but look at who's been catching Lucas Giolito the vast majority of the time this year, as he has been the White Sox best starting pitcher this season. So Sebi's a good catcher when it comes to working with these pitchers. They like him. None of this is to say anything negative towards Yasmani Grandal, but it's just, I think we were all looking around maybe during the offseason and being like, ooh, is there some upgrade maybe that they can make at that number two catcher position? Zavala has done a really good job for them, even, you know, forget about the offensive numbers and just look at what he's done working with the pitchers. It's been good, so give him some props for sure.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think some people have been wondering about Sebi's value just because the bat hasn't been there. We talked about his extreme BABIP last year and how that kind of shows his luck. He doesn't really hit the ball hard. He was just kind of finding places where defenders weren't, but he does provide defensive upside. I mean, he's a great framer. I know you like his catching ability over Grandal, just the ability to actually grab the ball.
Yeah.
I know you complain about that a lot, Herb. But
it happens
a lot. He's decent at with his arm too. So I mean, you know, he provides a lot as an actual catcher.
And he did that weird thing in Toronto where he was throwing down to first base every pitch.
With Michael, yeah, it started with Michael Kopech's start. Yeah, where he was just, I thought like it was type of like a, who was that guy who couldn't throw back to the pitcher, the catcher? I thought it was that type
I
of thing.
That guy.
Or a Major League Two thing, Rube, and where he was just, you know, have to say like Playboy things to throw it back to the pitcher in his own mind. But no, it was just a weird thing. He would throw down to first base all the time. I was like, what? Is he just actually trying to pick somebody off? Or just doing it for shits and giggles? I think it was mostly for shits and giggles.
Sasser?
Oh, Mackie Sasser?
Yeah. Mackie Sasser?
There's a lot of them, yeah. Mackie Sasser, the Chuck Knobloch was the second baseman who couldn't throw to first anymore after a while.
And but then, this guy's old. Wasn't Steve there Blass. One fairly recently? Was it like Chris Iannetta or something like that?
I don't know, but...
I don't want to... shit on Chris Iannetta for no reason. But
the pitcher that, or the hitter that turned pitcher, or pitcher turned hitter, Rick Ankiel, couldn't throw anymore. And so he turned into a hitter because he couldn't throw correctly over the plate.
John Lester couldn't throw to first.
Yep.
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 Yeah, those bugaboos. And now we're seeing a modern day one where Trevor May, who's out in Oakland, is going through some anxiety, and he came back last night and immediately was wild, and the crowd was booing him. It's like, man, give the man a little break, a little grace. These things are mental, and that's what I thought it was a Sebi, but that was just a thing. But he's been nothing short of spectacular as the backup catcher. I wouldn't want him to be starting more majority of the games, because now when Aloy comes back and other players come back, there's going to be a roster crunch. You can't get a lot of playing time for Grandal, because that bat is premium right now. It's doing its job. But Sebi is doing exactly what he is paid to do as a good backup catcher. Get a couple hits when you can, but mostly make these pitching staff better.
Well, part of the reason for bringing this up was the fact that Sebi is probably catching more than your regular run-of-the-mill backup catcher, because Yasmani Grandal has had health issues throughout the first 2 months of the season here. You've got those back spasms that were knocking him out of some games. And then now we hear from Pedro a little while ago that just having sore legs from that hamstring thing that knocked him out for a weekend series, it's lingering, and they're going to have to deal with it. And it might just mean play him a couple of games and then give him a day off, or you know, however they want to handle that specifically. But that means that he's not going to be able to catch certain days. And yeah, they can use the DH spot, but Herb, like you said, Aloy coming back is going to make that, if you want to put Yaz at the DH spot, it's going to squeeze somebody else out at this point. So Sebi's needed on this team, and you might see him put in a lot as a defensive replacement late in games too. He's needed on this team because Yaz is physically maybe unable to handle the sort of workload that he thought he might have been able to handle at the beginning of the year.
Well, I want to bring this up just because I feel like this was phrased well. Shout out to Nick Schaefer. I feel like we've been mentioning him a lot recently. But he tweeted this: you can let Berger sub for Moncada, Aloy, or Vaughn 1.5 to 2 times a week, and guess, and he's playing basically regularly. It's probably good that Grandal just might get some complete days off, you know, it's probably good that
he needs them.
Right. And it's probably, I think Moncada, you know, you talked about his speed, how he looked a little slow charging home on that sack fly. He probably needs some days off. Like right now, the White Sox having kind of too many players, or, you know, too many guys, and, you know, maybe a roster crunch or position crunch, and maybe, you know, some time issues, like probably a good thing, just because there is so many issues, or have been so many examples of leg flare-ups, you know, Andrew Vaughn last year, I mean, even Aloy already. Like, hopefully the White Sox can get into a place where everyone is available, so then they can kind of have that issue of too many bats, too. And I was thinking about this, like, with the roster crunch, I don't know what might happen with Hanser Alberto. Like, maybe Roby Gonzalez, who's continuing this hot streak, wins a position. Maybe it was a really smart move to include Hanser Alberto on the opening day roster, because he has that relationship with Pedro Grifol. And if they get to a point where they're like, Hanser, we're going to need to designate you for assignment, he actually accepts that assignment and goes down to Charlotte, knowing that if there is a moment where you need to get called up, he's going to get that respect from that manager and get that playing time. So, you know, we might see the White Sox be in a position where Hanser Alberto could be depth. I mean, that would be, you know, everything
ideal.
Falling. Yeah, it'd be ideal.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know if many people are knocking on the Hanser Alberto door. So, I mean, you know,
I think a team would pick him up immediately if he was available.
Really?
He plays a lot of positions and is hitting pretty well.
Well thought of veteran, too. I mean, just a guy who you can plug in anywhere and he knows what he's doing. I don't know how possible it would be that he would accept a minor league assignment. But
think about your guy, Steven.
He has an OPS plus of 80, by the way. I know he had that hot streak there, but he is below average.
There's a reason Romy's playing over him right now.
Yeah.
Right. Well, but he's also hurt.
He's also hurt.
Think about Steven's guy, Josh Harrison. Did you think he was going to get a job after that? He got a job immediately.
I don't think I ever said Josh Harrison wouldn't get a job. I thought the White Sox actually probably could have re-signed Josh Harrison.
I'm just saying, that's the type of player that I think Hanser's in that same vein. No, can play a bunch of positions.
Vinny had the list last year of players that were like positive offensive contributions at second base and positive defensive contributions at second base, and Josh Harrison was like one of the few.
It's true.
So I No, I mean, that's not, I mean, Hanser Roberto isn't.
You don't think Hanser Roberto get picked up immediately?
No.
Oh, yeah.
I think he would.
He DFA'd immediately. Somebody's like, oh, that's perfect.
He beat out Leury Garcia for a position battle. Where is Leury Garcia?
That doesn't mean that, doesn't mean that Hanser's not here and Leury's down here. Right. That doesn't mean that, like, they're right next to each other.
He has a career OPS of 674. His OPS right now is 663.
And people value that.
Maybe he'll be picked up by the A's.
Because you can play, he can play third.
The A's are a team.
Short.
The A's are a team.
You hear us talking about how we don't trust Jake Berger at second. Hanser Berger can play second base. Those things are valuable to have one guy can cover three positions for you immediately.
I'm not saying that that's not true, but again, if we're talking about a roster crunch, Romy Gonzalez can also do that. I mean, we heard Ben Zobrist's type from the general manager.
I'm not arguing that point. I'm just arguing that you're devaluing Hanser Roberto.
It's not how you view Hanser Roberto either. It's how 30 teams around the league.
Well, I know, yeah, and I'm just saying I don't think that they view him that highly.
And if he got DFA'd, I would be fine with Hanser Roberto not being on the White Sox. I don't think the White Sox would be fine with Hanser Roberto not being on the White Sox.
Didn't he sign a minor league deal with the Sox, right?
He's on the major league squad now.
I know he is, but that wasn't he signed a minor league deal, right?
At the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe.
And they DFA'd
him. I don't think he's shown anything different in the 30 games or so that he's played so far to be, you know, deserving of a major league contract. Like,
I think so. With all the White Sox injuries, yeah, with him being injured, Yoan being injured, a second baseman being injured, Hanser is very valuable to the White Sox. He's done well for the White Sox.
Never mind.
Okay. I mean, guys,
Hanser Roberto has been important for them in the first. I'm talking about when they crunch the roster and there is a possibility that he might be off the team. I think there is a possibility that you accept that assignment because I don't think there's many teams knocking on Hanser Roberto's door. That's all. Not saying that he hasn't been valuable, even though the stats are saying, you know, below average hitter, you know, low war, whatever. Like, he has been valuable filling a spot.
Just think of all the guys that get claimed on waivers when they get DFA'd. Sox have had it happen twice already this year.
Jose Ruiz and
Jake Diekman.
Jake Diekman.
Yeah.
We'll see. Who we both all thought were, well, pretty much trash at the time.
That's not true.
Did we not think at least Jose Ruiz?
I mean, you were on Close Ruiz.
Close Ruiz.
Is he not shown all right in Arizona?
I don't think you were saying that the White Sox made a bad move by DFAing him.
I don't know if he made a bad move, but I thought it was a little early.
I'm going to take a break.
Sean's already exhausted.
I'm not exhausted.
Frustrated. Read your ads.
I'll read my little ads. All right. Vinny's got a hat behind him. He's got a Pins and Aces hat behind him. And our guy Steven just took a golf trip down to Scottsdale. I know you had some Pins and Aces stuff that you were,
yeah,
you
I
were
was rocking. Yeah, I was rocking the polo. I had the liquor stick.
Can you explain that?
I'm sorry?
The liquor stick.
It's a stick.
It's a stick you fill with liquor, okay, and then it has this really cool dispense on it where you just press a little button, it's electric, and it shoots it out so smoothly.
Into
my cup of Sprite, which I had vodka.
So it's like a
hand sanitizer? Like a
keg kind of situation.
It's much more simple than that. Just press a button, and it just dispenses it out really nicely. Gotcha. I also had the shot tea. That was pretty fun. So what you do is it's like shotgunning a beer. You use that as your tea, though. Hit your tee shot, and then you shotgun it afterward. So I did a couple of those, and I actually had a really good drive on both of them.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
What smooth ass hat, though.
What were you shotgunning?
A beer.
Okay. All
right. 312 beer, to be specific.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Down there you Scottsdale. Go,
Steven.
Company man Steven.
That's right.
Pins and Aces.
And I was wearing my Shady Rays, too.
As I wear my Shady Rays.
I'm not lying about any of this. This is 100%
true. I know he did. He had it all. He was also on hold waiting for to get his Combat Energy Efficiency Program set up.
Pins and Aces is the official golf apparel partner of All City at CHGO, and Steven loves his Pins and Aces gear and got tons of compliments down in Arizona. They're a family-owned golf apparel and golf and apparel business, and they make amazing polos, hats, golf bags, and even our favorite beer sleeve. There's the liquor stick, there's the shot tee, and there's the beer sleeve. It's an innovative product that allows you to store 7 beers right inside your golf bag and keep the drinks cold the entire round. So check out pinsandaces.com. And use code CHGO to receive 15% off your first order and get free shipping. That's pinsandaces.com. Level up your golf game. Steven, was it more fun with your Pins and Aces stuff?
Substantially more fun.
Look at that. Substantially more fun. I think Sox Mom, Melissa's hanging out with us in the chat. She used Game Time this past Sox homestand to get in and not stress about getting into her favorite event, whether that was a White Sox game, sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. Game Time is the fastest and easiest way to buy tickets. And the Game Time guarantee means you'll get the best price if you find tickets in the same section and row for less. Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. And their lovely, lovely support staff will get you your money or your credit as fast as possible. Herb got his in 12 minutes when he got the Game Time guarantee. And you get images of your seat before you buy, so you know exactly what to expect when you arrive. My girlfriend is in the waters of trying to buy Taylor Swift tickets, and you know, you can buy a...
Is that how it works now, that the Taylor Swift tickets are so sought after that you have to actually like swim to an island to retrieve them?
Yes. Yeah. The credit card that company that she works with, they're not paying us, so I'm not going to mention them. They're actually releasing a few tickets, and they're burying it in... where was the alligator found?
Humboldt Park Lagoon.
Humboldt Park, yes. Yeah, they're burying it in Humboldt Park Lagoon. You have to scuba.
Swim down to the bottom. Down, yes. Okay, and then so that's why she's in the waters. There you go.
There's keys on the shore, and then you have to find the key number three. There's a box number three. You got to scuba down, unlock it. And
that
then
Taylor Swift. That Taylor Swift.
But
I don't think your music's that good enough. I'm not doing that.
Dude, I
Game Time would be much easier.
It's true.
All I was trying to... The Game Time thing... the Game Time thing... She you could see where the seats are, and she saw that she could pay $1,300 for blocked seats. Okay. Behind the stage. So, yeah.
For Taylor Swift?
You haven't heard about this? Oof.
Yikes.
Blocked seats?
Yeah, oh, like behind the stage.
Like 13, the pole 13. Seat at Wrigley.
Oh, so yeah. You can't. So you just hear her music, can't really see her?
Yeah. Pretty much.
It's like going to Ravinia.
So she didn't buy those. Thank God. Right. So you can get images of your seat before you buy those bad blocked seats, and you can get the best seats possible, and you don't have to stress with Game Time.
$1,300.
Do you know what I would do? There is a thing on there called Affirm. You know, she wants to go in those block seats. You just pay monthly, or bi-weekly. I did that for the Avett brothers out in Colorado, Red Rocks.
Or she could buy non-block seats and also use Affirm.
She could use that money to go to like 100 concerts, also on Game Time.
Like, I get it, because like before the ticket, the concert was announced, like this was all that she was like thinking about. So I understand needing to go to this concert. And I'm like, yeah,
that's
here,
good.
Let me finish this out. Oh, also, Shmoke, I don't think you've gotten back to us on the bet, so make sure you finish this out.
Okay, did he? Okay. In the comments, right,
we'll finish out this read. If you want to buy Taylor Swift tickets, they could be $1,280 with code CHGO. See? Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code CHGO for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code CHGO for $20 off. Download the Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guarantee. And hey, if you want to go to maybe a White Sox game, those are much more affordable, and you could probably get a couple for $20. You could probably go to a couple games for $20.
How about
with
this?
That code.
So I'm going to blow your minds right now. You ready? Mm-hmm. I have seen Taylor Swift perform live.
Really?
So, 2013, okay. I went to see the world's greatest rock and roll band, the Rolling Stones, at the United Center. And during this whole tour, this was their 50th anniversary tour, and every stop, they were bringing out a special guest. They played at the hockey arena in New Jersey. Bruce Springsteen's there. They're playing, you know, they're playing all over. They've got, you know, they brought out Clapton when they were in London, all sorts of crazy cool stuff. They come to Chicago, and we're like, oh, buddy guy. Their guy, right? Buddy guy. They're going to bring him out there. It's going to be great. We're so pumped to be here and see not only the Stones with all that came, went along with that, but they're going to bring out Buddy Guy, and they're going to do a blues song. It's going to be great. But this was all surprise, right? So there was never announced. You just had to figure it out. So they get to the point. They're like, all right, we're going to bring out a special guest. And we're like, yeah, here we go. And they bring out Taylor Swift. That's and weird. This is 10 years ago, Taylor Swift. So still popular, but not whatever
and
popular
the place
she is
erupts.
Now. Everyone sat down.
Oh, yeah. Like,
everyone
know your audience.
Down.
No
it
one's
was
ever
a
Taylor
joke.
Swift.
And they played a Bad Stone song on top of it.
What'd they play?
As Tears Go By.
What is that?
It's the one they wrote for Marianne Faithfull. It's not one of my favorites. But, yes, literally everyone in the place sat down. The song ended. She left. Everyone stands back up, and they did the rest of the show.
That's
it was
brutal.
Great.
Like, what did they think it was going to be? A pop? Yeah. 50-year-old dudes. Yeah, right. That's my shit.
That's like Jay Zawoski, Lawrence, and Casey and I were all talking about us going to the National this past weekend. And be like, if the National brought out like Ice Spice, like all those dads just being like,
brought out what?
Ice exactly. Spice. Exactly.
Exactly.
Is that one of the Spice Girls?
No.
For you, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Might as well be.
That's the best way I could explain.
I barely know who she is, and I'm supposed to, but no.
Dun-dun-dun.
I don't even know a song of hers.
Hey, she's got a song with Taylor Swift. Let me look at this. We're just tying this all together. All right. Let's go back to the White Sox. Oh, no, real quick. Just about Taylor Swift. Just because you
okay.
Sean's not done.
$1,300 for this.
It's so, too much.
There's three concerts that are going on at Soldier Field. And, like, I was looking on Game Time, and it was the lowest prices for all these concerts. And it's Ed Sheeran, $50. You can, you know, get upper deck seats for that bad concert for $50.
Wow.
You can go see Beyonce for $140 up in the upper deck. And Word. You could go see Taylor Swift in the same seats for $1,300. Mm. What?
Yeah.
Like, again, you were making fun of me for, you know, spending $200 plus $250 for seeing Lollapalooza in 2013. I saw like 18 concerts for $200. You're going to go see one concert for $1,300?
It's what? Too much. It's too much.
I think under the seat, you get like $1,000 back.
Like, that's, like an Oprah type giveaway kind of thing?
You get an iPod Touch.
Oh, that's nice.
All right. So real quick, we'll go to Dan's comment. Fox Sports says 88's playing tomorrow. I don't think Fox Sports has a beat reporter in Cleveland, but I think what we have learned is Luis Robert has a very specific injury. He's day-to-day.
He told the beat writers today after the game that he's playing tomorrow.
Oh, okay, yes. Cool.
So he is playing tomorrow. That's from James and Daryl and Merck and the fellas out in the Cleve.
Absolutely. The Cleve. Mm.
Man, they're going to have a great time tonight in Detroit.
Steveland Wonder.
No, Wonder's not his real name. Morris, I believe it was.
Yeah, Hardaway Morris.
Yeah, I know. But I'm kind of blending the two.
Yeah. Evitt's red now.
So, what?
That's Stevie Wonder backwards. It was one of the titles of his albums.
Oh.
I don't know, Melissa. If they had Michael Jackson brought him back to life, I would go pay $1,300 for it.
Yeah.
I would.
I'd see dead.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson.
Probably still be better than Taylor Swift.
Why don't you just invest the $1,300 in a time machine and go see whoever you want back in the 70s for time like machine's
gonna,
$4?
If it's only $1,300, baby.
You think a quality time machine's going to cost $1,300?
I said invest.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
contributed to the effort.
Okay, but Luis Robert, this is what he hurt.
Here we go.
Very specific with the beat writers. This is Dr. Anderson, Dr. Duber, and Dr. Lawrence reporting for
more like a PA.
A PA?
Yeah.
All right. You're just assistant.
I didn't go to the doctor.
So Luis Robert is day-to-day because he has hurt his rectus femoris. And as you can see, that is right kind of in the middle of the leg. And just with my 7 years of doctor school.
I like how you call it doctor school, too.
It flexes.
As they do.
I went to doctor school. Vinny, where did you go?
Where did I go to doctor school?
Yeah,
where did
you go to doctor school?
I don't know. Right. That reminded me of Operation. Are we going to be trying to extract something from Luis Robert Jr.'s leg?
Yes. The rectus femoris flexes the hip along with the sartorius and the iliopsoas and extends the lower leg at the knee, working in conjunction with the other three quadricep muscles. I don't know what the hell it does. I think when he fell down in the outfield, you know, maybe he hurt his leg.
He's got a tight hip.
Got a tight hip. So, I do
my
like
professional medical opinion.
Very, very, very specific with it. You know, in hockey, it was always lower body injury. Mm-hmm. And we are getting very, very the specific
yeah,
to
right.
the actual muscle. So all of us can play doctor.
And, I just pumped up my guy, Jose Ruiz, blew a save versus the Phillies.
Let's go.
Son of a bitch.
Once a White Sox, always a White Sox. But expect Luis Robert in the lineup tomorrow, and we have a pregame and a postgame tomorrow. So we'll talk about Luis Robert being in the lineup. Then, all right, let's go to, we talked about the 9 straight quality starts. I mean, not really, because again,
Asterisk 9, yeah.
Combined quality start. But if we go to that one stat, Steven, kind of showing what they were before and after, this was flashed on the NBC Sports Chicago broadcast today. First 28 games for the Sox, 7-21, an ERA of 5.88. They hit 26 home runs in 28 games. They had a slugging percentage of .367, a run differential of -68. They won 0 series. Now, in their last 23 games, 14-9, an ERA now under .360,
They've hit 26 home runs still in 23 games. A slugging percentage around 416. A run differential now of plus 19. And they've won five series. So great pitching, obviously, has been part of that nine straight games, as I've mentioned now about 100 times. What else has been key? Obviously, the home runs. We've talked about that, you know, really coming along since Andrew Vaughn kind of capped off that crazy comeback against the Rays. What else has kind of played into this mix?
Bullpen, man. I mean, obviously, that goes into the ERA, mm-hmm. but you bring up how good the starting pitching has been, and one of the effects of the starting pitching being that good is that the bullpen is not being relied on quite as heavily as it was earlier in the season. Now, these guys are not only pitching less, which is helpful, but they're pitching very well. You saw what the guy who's been grabbing the headlines has been Joe Kelly, but boy, has Kendall Graveman been a lot better. Reynaldo Lopez has been better, and then you've gotten the contributions that have been kind of year-long ones from Keenan Middleton, Gregory Santos as well. And they're about to get, they already got Garrett Crochet back. They're about to get Liam Hendricks back at some point too. This is the bullpen that was envisioned. Maybe it's 2 years after it was envisioned to be this way, because Joe Kelly obviously had a rough go of things last year. Kendall Graveman was good, but had his moments. Right now, you're getting what those two guys were paid those big bucks to do, which is lock down the end of games alongside Liam Hendricks, who's not quite back yet, but those two guys have been great. The bullpen was one of the worst in baseball through the first month of the season, and even into May. You know, those numbers were ugly, 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 up there with being as bad as the Oakland A's, which is not something that you ever want to be in 2023. It has been terrific lately. So if you're wondering how have they turned things around, they've stopped allowing runs. What a concept. And that goes with both the starting pitching and the relief pitching have both been very good in concert with one another.
I mean, we said the home runs, and we having one of the best players in baseball were through this stretch. Luis Robert has been a monster through this stretch. And they also got home Jake Berger during this stretch. So those two players on one team has been great for the White Sox. And that's why I think they've been playing better, hitting the ball over the fence. Ball go far, team go far. And Vinny talked about the bullpen, but then we get bookend for the starter on Tuesday, Jimmy Lambert. The closer on Tuesday, or on today, Jimmy Lambert. That man has been struggling mostly the year, and now he's actually pitching well because I think he's more settled into his role. And as Vinny said, we're going to get more help with Liam Hendricks and pushing everybody down to a level where you're going to have Groot Santos barely pitch. Like, if in a game where it's, you know, hanging in the balance, because now I think they've set it up with Joe Kelly, Kendall Graveman, and then you go with Liam Hendricks as the closer. Groot Santos has been excellent this year, and to have him just be like an afterthought is great.
Same thing. An afterthought. I mean you're Jose not going to be Ruiz used. Was their worst pitcher and was used like the most over the past 2 years.
Yeah, because we're losing all the time. I think this team,
if they're nine games under 500,
they're winning more. I'm saying they're winning more. Winning more, sure, because they're playing better baseball, because the starters are doing their job and the bullpen is well rested. And then when they come in, they're just absolutely filthy. So I think, I'm not saying he's not going to be great. I'm just saying, like, we're not going to be like, oh, man, it's Groot Santos time in the seventh inning. No, it's going to be Joe Kelly time, Kendall Graveman time, and then Liam Hendricks time, as Rick Hahn scheduled it to be last year and this year.
Absolutely. You guys are doing a great job of hitting that like button. We got 120 people or so watching. We got 50 likes. So if you haven't liked it yet, make sure you're hitting that like button real quick. The bullpen's been better. The starting pitching has been better. We mentioned the home runs, but you have mentioned that, you know, it's Jake Berger and Luis Robert doing a lot of that lifting there. We had a question not too long ago on an off day show. What unit were you most worried about? The starters, the bullpen, the lineup? Are you most worried about the lineup out of those three now after, you know, we close out this series?
I think the bullpen always is going to be a concern no matter what because of the volatility. I think the hitters are fine. They're all right. I don't really worry about them, especially when Aloy comes back, because as we talked about early in the show, I think they have great problems where they have a bunch of people who are doing great jobs. Even though he's not doing a job that would warrant him a start, Clint Frazier's been nice. I think they have an overabundance of players that can hit the ball and hit the ball consistently and well. And I know we're going to go to Tim Anderson and what he's done and changed his swing. if that man ever gets too close to what he usually is, I think the offense should be fine. Pitching staff, the starting staff specifically, has been filthy. And maybe you have a question mark because there's no Mike Clevinger for another start, and so you got to do another bullpen day. But I think out of everything, out of those three categories, I would say still I'm concerned the most about the bullpen, but I'm not concerned at all about the bullpen, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Vinny?
I mean, it's with how they're playing right now, it's kind of hard to point to any of them. I think you've got to drill down and get a little bit more specific, right? I mean, you can't say that they should be concerned with the starting rotation. We just talked about how great it's been. But yeah, maybe you're concerned about, if you're the White Sox, maybe you're concerned about the sustainability of Lance Lynn and Michael Kopech after what they did the first month of the season. Maybe you're concerned about why has Dylan Cease been good but not great as you were needing him to be at the beginning of the year. Maybe you're concerned about Mike Clevinger and his health. But overall, they've been fantastic lately, so why would you be concerned? In the lineup, the same kind of thing, right? They've been good lately, but maybe you are concerned about Jake Berger's performance away from the south side. Maybe you're concerned about Tim Anderson and what he's been doing for the length of the season. Maybe you're concerned about Andrew Benintendi and the lack of power. Maybe you're concerned about...
Same with the other Andrew. I mean...
Yeah, maybe thought, you can. I mean, yeah, his issues homers right now are not limited to that either. But maybe you're concerned about those little things, but not the macro of the lineup because it's gotten the job done. Whether it's Romy Gonzalez coming through with a big hit the last few days, or Gavin Sheets being consistent, or Jake Berger coming up huge at home. So I think that's good for the White Sox right now. They don't necessarily need to point to one or two or three of these big problems like they had in April. They can drill down a little bit more, which makes things a little bit more fixable, which maybe makes a turnaround a little bit more possible.
We'll take a quick break and we'll talk about a little part.
What's up? Can I say something real quick? Our people who are watching right now are the best. I mean, Schwell with his jokes earlier, and now Clark, he says, you know where you can find it in a pen? A pet pig. Takes it all back. Wraps a bow in it.
Pretty good.
Our guys are all out of here.
Can we go back to Schwell real quick? Did he follow up on the bet, you said?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, well, we can go to a super chat as well, because I do have an answer for that. For the end of the show, and we'll just do it now before we hit the ad break. Vinny, it's damn near summer. What are the best neighborhood street festivals I should go to? Anyone can chime in, though, since it was directed to you at first. And thank you again for this super chat, Schwell. We appreciate you. Since it was directed at you, I will give you the floor. If you do need time to research, I can't answer.
Well, I'm going to go ahead. I'll go ahead and give you one. I don't know the dates that they're doing it this year, but go ahead and Google Ravenswood on Tap. If you're a beer drinker, that one's a great one. You go down to Malt Row. There's a tent. There's tents with about 8-10 different Chicago breweries. You can sample everything you want there. It's very good. That's one I would highly recommend. Lakeview Taco Fest is usually a fun time as well. Went a couple summers ago to that. Got to drink out of a pineapple, which is always something that you want to be able to do. Steven Nicholas, our guy, might be able to tell you about one that's been on my to-do list, Greek Fest over in Greektown. Ooh. On Halstead Street. So
yeah, done that before.
Yeah, that's one that's been on my to-do list, and I believe there is some good stuff going on all the time in Pilsen. I believe is this weekend the Mole Fest, and then they've usually got a taco one also. So, the food down there is always fantastic. But really, you can't go wrong, right? They're all over the city. It's the best part. It's one of the best parts of Chicago, in my opinion. Stay away from all that Grant Park downtown stuff. Stay away from the wherever they're doing the taste this year. Go to the neighborhood ones. Those are the ones you want to do.
Mole de Mayo is Saturday, May 27th, so Sunday, May 28th in Pilsen. An address of 1801 South Ashland Ave. I don't know if that's just the only place or one of the places, but there you go. You got anything? Or
it's one right by my house. Every Thursday in the summer, so it actually has to be summer, they do this like a street festival. I live right by Argyle, so it's Asia on Argyle. So there's a lot of good Asian food there. There's good music there. People just going up and down. You know, if you like Asian food, Vietnamese, Chinese, Japanese food, it's your spot right there.
I might have to go on down to Mole Fest in Pilsen on Saturday.
It sounds yeah, fun.
I might have to check that out.
Not heard about that.
It might be on my to-do list this weekend.
Good right. Mole is delicious.
Oh, it is very good.
I it's something that I am very intrigued by. I've had it very sparingly. Mm-hmm. So going to a festival to try a ton of different moles sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. So the one that I would throw out that I've been to, I saw Super Chunk there. I saw Open Mike Eagle there. Wicker Park Fest, July 28th, July 30th. It's their 19th season on Milwaukee Ave to North Ave to Paulina Street or Paulina Street.
Paulina.
And the best part, it's presented by Goose Island Beer Company.
Oh, so, honk, honk.
I don't know who is playing this year. They have not announced the bands just yet. They're saying new artists are coming soon. So we will see. Last year, Local H played. That's probably like the biggest one. The Happy Fits returned. Laura Stevenson, if anyone likes Laura Stevenson, I do. Caroline Rose as well, just to name a few. So I've always liked Wicker Park Fest. But anyways, those are some fests.
I don't know when it takes place, but there's one out in the South Side. It's the Chosen Few DJs fest that goes on out south. And then I think it's the Silver Room one that happens in Hyde Park. So check out both of those. Maybe Chosen DJs. I don't know when that is. So Chosen Few DJs.
Picnic and Festival, 63rd and Hayes.
It's like by where the Obama Library is going up.
Is that your favorite impression to do, Joe Biden?
That one is, who was that? The singer, Hank Williams Jr., when he was on Fox.
You're doing
Obama.
An anti-Obama yes. Obama. Okay.
Did you like last homestand, you made a Hank Williams Jr. quote tweet.
Yes.
My rowdy friends are, I think you had a rowdy friends tweet.
No, I did the Monday Night Football song.
Yeah, right? So, I mean, hey, we're all quoting Hank Williams Jr. in this month of May.
That's something that you want to be doing.
Just the songs.
You did.
Just the songs.
You two have.
Just the songs. That's it.
All right, let's go into our break. And, Shwell, real quick, we'll pay off the bet. Herb has to shave his facial hair if the Sox are not within three games of first place by July 4th. Sean has to get a pit pig if they are within three games. No. We said no. So thank you for the suggestion.
I'll do it.
No.
I'll do it, Shwell.
Herb stakes are way lower.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have all the equipment at my house. Sean has to literally find a pig and keep that sumbitch at his house.
I will shave my face. That's
Jackson Park. How is thank that you, not fair? Wendell Gates.
You know, why do I have to get a pet pig? What the hell? All right, let's take a quick break. I'll let you know about the fantastic shades that Steven was wearing down in Arizona. Take on the sun with gear built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered with the warm weather ahead with premium polarized shades at an affordable price. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that offers a world-class product that's just as good as any expensive pair we've worn. They have durable frames and extremely clear optics for outdoor adventures like golfing. And that's not all. Shady Rays, I don't know why I said it like that. Shady Rays offers the most insane protection program of all of eyewear. Every pair of sunglasses is backed by lost and broken replacements. If you lose or break your pair, even on day one, they tell us that they will send you a brand new pair. No questions asked. You go wear your Shady Rays with confidence because they have your back long after your purchase and after within 30 days of your purchase. If you don't love your Shady Rays, you can exchange them for a new pair or return them for free. There's no risk when you shop. Their team always has your back.
Golfing.
Exclusive for our listeners, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the season. Go to ShadyRays.com and use code CHGO for 50% off 2+ pairs of polarized shades. Try for yourself these shades rated 5 stars by over 250,000 people. Also want to let you know about FOCO. We don't have any of the set decorations that they donated in here right now, but they did give us a lovely TA one and a lovely Vinny one. I mean, Southpaw one. So get fitted in the best sports gear around. They have hoodies, shoes, signs, bobbleheads, and everything in between. And since it is spring and baseball season, they have Aloha shirts, straw hats, polos, bags, everything you need for a game. Look at Law Dog. Bringing in the FOCO decorations. They donated that awesome piece. So go show them some love, that great TA one. And you can check out FOCO.com. That's FOCO.com. Or click the link in the description below for all non-presale items. Use promo code CHGO for 10% off.
This is what golfing. I do. I just do my, I carry around pins and aces, wear my Shady Rays, and I carry this FOCO with me all the day. Like, which station you want?
You're always drinking a 312 as well.
Oh, man, that's my shit.
Mercy. Vinny's got one cracked over there. Oh, yeah, you had the full pocket pills. Oh, it's what the Brewers are drinking.
I understand why.
All right. Let's go into the TA stuff, right? We got two more things, Steven. Anything else I'm forgetting? Okay, we have the TA stuff and then my bad, dumb
wrong.
Yeah,
stat
if you want that, awesome. It's there. Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, let's get into the TA stuff because Herb and I had a little discussion about this. So this was flashed on the NBC Sports Chicago broadcast after Tim Anderson's first at bat in the first inning, and then the fourth inning came up, third inning.
Yeah, I think the fourth inning.
He ended up singling immediately after they showed this, but last year you can kind of see the lowered leg kick for TA, and this year it's a little bit more bent. It's a little bit more pronounced. And then, Stephen, if you want to go to the next one, you can kind of see that it's a little bit lowered.
And that's from today.
And that's from today after the hit. So this is immediately what they went to after TA laced a single back up the middle. We did see him hit a lot of balls to the left side of the infield, so to the third base and shortstop. So, you know, we were again, seen so much of TA this year and even last year shoot it to the right side of the field and shoot it into right field. But we saw him, you know, pull the ball a little bit more today. I don't know what you make of the stance, Herb. I don't know if it's unlocking anything. I don't know what you made of the discussion between Stoney and Jason as well, but you know, jump in.
I was thinking that last night he was going against NL De Los Santos, who struck out the three guys he did face, but he was throwing fastballs right past Tim Anderson, which is very unusual if you know Tim Anderson's thing. You know, he shoots balls to right field because he waits and lets that ball travel a little bit longer than an average right-handed batter. And so he was way late on it. And that's what I was thinking, like, is causing him and the hands not to come through, because if your timing's off where you have to lift your leg higher than you usually have to, you're going to be late on balls that was with a little velocity to it. And so today, Cal Quantrill, first pitch of the game, threw that cutter. Tim tried to ambush him, and it didn't work out too tough because it, you know, traveled as a cutter does a little bit off the end of the bat. And then that second at bat, Cal Quantrill came back with a fastball, and Tim did the same, pretty much the same thing, same swing with a lesser leg kick, and he crushed that ball up the middle. I don't know if it was off the bat, but it looked like a pretty mighty hit. So adjustments, and I think it was either Lynn or DJ also talking about it on the radio, and then Steve and Jason talking about it too. Like, he fixed this in a night. Like, he was doing the high leg kick last night, and today he came in with the shorter stroke of where he used to do last year. I understand that you were saying that it was more of a driveline thing, the higher leg kick, that you get more power, generate more your torque and such like that, but what's working for Tim should continue, especially if he's struggling this year and struggling also, as he said before, with the pitch clock. I think, you know, a shorter, more compact, more recognizable, familiar swing should be what he's doing this year, because the struggles this year are mighty, not only because the injury, but I think, you know, the timing is off. And when you come back from an injury, when you were hot initially and you come back from the injury, timing is hard to recapture. And so he's just going back to old stuff that's familiar and worked for him in the past, which I see no problem with. I also see no problem with him trying to improve from the player he was to another player that's at a higher level.
I got to be honest, it looks exactly the same. It looks, last year, obviously, it's a little bit lower, but the actual height of his leg this year and the hit that he had today looks the same. It looks like it's hitting his knee. It looks like it's hitting his mid thigh, the one that's planted. His back thigh and his front knee are aligned. I think it looks a little bit more closed, like he's a little bit more turned in the one prior to this, Steven. Like he's a little bit more separated, but it still
and look
seems
at the hands
like he's
too.
Huh?
Look at the hands.
The hands are the same.
Look at the hands and where the bat's at.
But look at this year and the one in this today are the same. This year and the other picture, the hands are the same.
Well, that might be part of the problem too.
What? I feel like I'm reading a highlights magazine in a waiting room of a doctor's office.
I feel like it's the Pam Beasley thing where they're distracting Creed and they're like, management wants you to find the difference between these two pictures, and like they're the exact same.
I don't think they're the same.
I think that, you know, the idea is turn your body in a little bit more, explode, create more rotation and torque and power. That's the driveline thing. It seems the same, though, the leg kick. I think it's exactly what he has been doing. I think that, you know, maybe he's just trying to be a little bit
see an
more
emotion,
early.
Though? If you see an emotion, it's not the same.
All right, and hey.
Like, the left leg is coming up higher than it seems like the last year's and today's, which is more hey, it's up and then it's down. We this played, one seems like it's more exaggerated from the drive line.
Well, I did, yeah. I think maybe he's working on being a little bit earlier, but I think the same motion, the motion's the same. I don't know. We could play swing doctor later because we played a real doctor earlier. So
you went to school there, school for 7 years.
Love doctor school. All right, that's it though. We'll end it here. Make sure you're hitting that thumbs up button. White Sox win another series, 5 of 7 in May. 7 more victories in May. And they'll finish 20-9. So, you know.
That means they need to win out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's doable.
Mm.
It is possible.
It is
possible. It's a lot more possible than 50-0, which I said yesterday. So, you know, hey, we're working on it. Anyways.
60, like, is that Rocky Biddle?
What was that?
60? Is that Rocky Biddle?
I have no idea.
I think it's Rocky Biddle. I'm pretty sure it's
best
Rocky
of luck. And to answer Armando Rivas, so why would a player like Tim change his swing after success in 2021 and 2022? He started to struggle a little bit in 2022, and I think really what he was trying to do in it with driveline was just kind of get back to where he was. It really didn't seem like he's tweaked a little bit, like too much, like maybe hand positioning and maybe leg lift, but it's not really a different swing.
Somebody went down motion, just because of that. They didn't want Rocky Biddle to be there. Now it's 59. What a
it wasn't Rocky. Oh, it was Rocky Biddle. You were right.
There,
also,
we're back.
Good job.
Also, Scott Schoenweiss.
Ooh.
Ugh.
Also, Deontay Heath.
Ugh.
Not recognizable.
Frankie Montas in his brief White Sox career.
Ooh.
And of course, Jimmy Cordero. And of course, Dallas Keuchel.
Oh, God. How could I forget?
Give a thumbs up for Dallas Keuchel. That's Vinny Duber. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him on Twitter at EckernWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. And I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. Steven, do you want to flash this just real quick? My bad, stupid mystery thing. I had 62 votes on a poll. 87.1% of the voters, or 54 of the 62, selected player B. They did select a player whose stats were completely wrong. I had that the person, player B, had an ISO of 180. It was actually 0.057. You know, we don't actually have to do this because the numbers were wrong. And I'm just
who are they, though?
Who do you think?
Well, on the A is Benintendi.
Yeah.
B?
Shocker.
B? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Who can it be now? Larry Garcia.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, Larry.
Did you purposely pick a song that you could sing Larry's name to the tune of?
Just kind of happened, you know. He saw Second
Liam.
City, call me up.
He saw Liam on the screen. He's like, let me go to Australia's favorite band.
I'm a big Overkill guy. That's a great one.
61 likes. Willie Garcia of the Trace Garcia outfield.
Let's go. Mm. All right. And Leury Garcia. Look at that synergy. So that's going to do it for the CHGO White Sox podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We got a pregame at 5. Sounds right.
Yes. It's a 5:40 start. Yeah.
5:40. So it will be a 5 o'clock pregame, and then we'll have a postgame show after the White Sox take on the Detroit City Motor Kitties. Talk to you then. Go Sox.